Truth, perspective, and growth. This is the Michael Carroll Discipleship Podcast. Depression, anxiety, people who suffer with suicidal thoughts, people who suffer with emotional trauma, all that has been broken and stained with corruption of sin and death is waiting for a generation of sons and daughters who will rise up in their calling, rise up and look into this world and walk with the authority that God's given you.
How many of you guys ready to get into the Word tonight? Oh, nah, y'all got to sound more excited than that. I said, how many of you guys ready to get into the Word tonight? You know, it's my favorite part. And listen, we just honored two of our interns, and it's only right that I ask one of my dearest friends, one of my closest friends, to come up here and speak to y'all tonight. He is our intern pastor. He is the frontline pastor. He is a pastor rapper. Y'all know him as Pastor Michael. You can come on up to the stage. Now, he's not going to rap to y'all tonight, but he is going to drop some knowledge. Word. Love you, man.
I dropped the beat. Nah, I'm just playing. I'm just joking. How you guys doing tonight? Thank you. Yes, I'm talking about, I'm going to need energy from you guys because, listen, if y'all fall asleep, I'll fall asleep. It'll be a really bad night tonight, so don't do that on me, all right? Y'all with me? Stay with me. It's a pleasure for me to be here tonight. I love Crave. I love you guys. I love my interns. I love my staff. I love all you guys. And I get to see you guys from a distance. I'll be watching you, not in a creepy way or anything, but I watch you guys kind of grow, do your thing. And I'm so proud. I'm truly, truly proud of this ministry. I've been to quite a several different youth groups, as I know Pastor Joel has, being an artist and everything. And so we get to see the pulse of different youth groups. And something special is going on here. Not every youth group goes after God. Not every youth group loves to be in God's presence. And I feel like this is a place where you kind of love to be in God's presence. Am I wrong or am I right? Am I kind of getting, all right? You guys love Jesus? Well, that's good news. That's one. You guys love God's presence too, right? Okay. Well, that's good. Well, I'm glad I'm here then. And I think that I have a message that is hopefully going to challenge you and I'm going to give the opportunity at the end to kind of respond to that. But it was funny because today I was sitting in the back and I was listening to your guys' stories about kind of getting out of school. And by the way, I hope you guys are excited to be out of school. That used to be the favorite time of year for me. I was like, man, I don't got to listen to any more teachers. I don't got to wake up early. I don't got to do my homework. Like, this is epic. Life is about to be awesome. Can you feel me right now? Are you there with me? Is anybody feeling that way right now? That was me. Oh, I totally love this time of year. And also, my birthday is May 30th, so it was like double awesome for me. So, May 30th, my size is large, and I wear size 12 shoes, just so you know. I'm just throwing it out there. But this was my favorite time of year. I was thinking about one time I was in sixth grade in school, and we used to have substitute teachers. I don't know if any of you guys have substitute teachers or not. We used to have this. See, I'm a little bit older than you guys. Our substitute teachers used to be really weird. Like, they couldn't get hired for a real teaching position job, so they were the substitute teachers, and so they usually ended up with the weird ones that everybody kind of just like felt awkward around. And we had this one guy, and he was probably a sweet guy, and I really didn't know him much, but he just kind of was an awkward and weird guy. So I came up with the really great idea one time to play a little prank. I hope you guys do not do this, by the way. This is not good advice coming from the Bible or anything like that, okay? Anyway, so I came up with an idea to play a little prank. Now, I am a little bit older, so we had something back in the day called a fart bag. Has anybody ever heard of a fart bag before? It was totally awesome. It was like the most epic thing ever. So I want to explain to you what a fart bag is before I go into how I actually use this in school. So go ahead and throw the image up there real quick. This is what a fart bag actually is. Now, this thing was amazing, okay? All you had to do was step on it, and you had about 5 seconds before it blew up. And wherever it blew up, it was throwing all sorts of nasty, funky, smelling stuff all over the place. And whoever was in the vicinity was going to smell like a fart, okay? So that's what a fart bag was. So actually, it was cool because we used to have an ice cream truck drive around the neighborhood, and they sold us these. Can you believe that? Anyways, I bought one off the ice cream truck. So I said, listen, this guy, our substitute teacher, he had a black leather jacket. And so I said, wouldn't it be epic if, like, I put this fart bag on top of his black leather jacket? You're like, no, I'm probably the dumbest kid in here. That's not a good idea, right? I thought it was a great idea. So I actually stomped on it. He was doing his thing. I stomped on his bag. I had about 5 seconds, okay? So I had 5 seconds to take it over to the jacket, and I had to smoothly walk off like I didn't do anything. And before I even made it to my seat, all you hear is, and I'm not even sitting down yet. So I kind of quietly take my seat, and everybody's looking around trying to figure out what's going on, and I'm just the only one looking down trying to act like I'm doing my homework, and literally the worst at getting away with anything because everybody was looking around like, what's going on? What was that noise? And I'm like, so I think it was clear. I think the guy, the substitute teacher, kind of started to begin to figure out what was going on. And I'll spare you with all the details. Let's just say it was only a couple minutes, and all of a sudden, the principal was at the door. Mr. Carroll, I need to see you. And yes, sir. And I went ahead and walked, and the rest is history. And I spent about 10 days in detention, and I'm not going to go into the details like that, but I'll tell you one thing I noticed in that room is immediately after the fart bag went off, everybody knew something was about to go down. Everybody knew the atmosphere just shifted. It was a good day to a bad day, and somebody's about to have a really bad day. And you know what's funny is we all kind of have that feeling. We don't have to be told when something's wrong. We don't have to be told when something's about to change. If I came up to you right now and took your shoes off your feet, you would know, hey, that's wrong. Don't do that to me, right? Because that's the wrong thing to do. You just know. And everybody, all of us, kind of have that feeling. Matter of fact, the same feeling that you have if maybe I stole your lunch at school. You wouldn't like me if I did that, right? Especially anybody here who gets hungry at lunchtime. The same feeling you would have if I stole your stuff, the same feeling I had if I did something wrong to you, is that same feeling we have when we just automatically know something is wrong. And the same feeling we have when we know something is wrong is actually, if we could be honest with ourselves, is a feeling we have often in our lives. And there's a certain restlessness that we have within our hearts. Think about your life at school. Think about your life at home. Think about your experiences with our friendship. The restlessness that we have in our hearts reveals to us that there's something more we can be doing. There's something more that we should be doing in this world. All of us at one point or another, we wrestle with the question of why aren't we experiencing the feeling of being content? Why aren't we feeling like everything is okay? And if we could be really honest with ourselves, many of us try very hard, and some of us are better at this than others, to try to get everything in order in our lives, right? We get the nice friends over here. We get the social, we get the Instagram likes going over here. We get our little thing going on over here. We try to get our life all put together, but we just can't get a grip on it. Something is off. Something is out of order. And like my substitute teacher who immediately felt the emotion of his leather jacket being soaked by foul, stinky, smelly stuff by the hands of yours truly, that was me. There was something out of balance, something that is not the way that it should be. It is almost a sense of like a lack of justice that opens our eyes to a reality that I believe most people in the world have chosen to accept as being their permanent existence. Maybe that's you. It's almost that we have given up on hope of ever seeing true change in our life, true change in our world. But here's the truth that I want to deliver today, and I hope you get this, that you play a huge role, not just a small role, not just a okay, semi-big role. You play a huge role at bringing change into this world. That's you. The very change that our generations before us have desperately been trying to accomplish, but have been going about it in all the wrong ways, is the very change that you can, and I'm here to challenge you, you must accomplish. When I say you, I don't mean this youth group. I don't mean Crave. I don't mean City Life Church. I mean every single individual person in this room. You've been called to bring change that this world desperately needs. And I'm going to prove this to you tonight. And I want to make a deal with you. Has anybody ever made a deal before? Are you willing to make a deal with me? I'm going to make a deal with you, okay? Whether you like it or not, we're going to make a deal, all right? Okay. I want to make a deal that if I prove to you tonight that you can not only make a change in this world, but that God has absolutely called you to make a change, and he's made it possible and given you everything you need to make a change in this world, that if I prove that to you, that you must decide tonight that something has to change. You must respond by genuinely deciding to at least look at your life differently. That you're not going to walk out of this room the same person you were before. You're not going to let that dream, you're not going to let that vision, you're not going to let that passion for ministry die, but it's going to come alive. So, do we have a deal? Are y'all with me? Do I got anybody's attention in here? Okay, so let's go. The first thing I need you to know is that you were created in God's image to be his image bearers on this earth and to establish his authority and govern. Has anybody ever been like, maybe I could be the president of the United States or be a governor one day, or wonder what that would be like? Anybody ever felt like that? Well, listen, God gave you authority to govern. He gave you a government position in his kingdom. Genesis chapter 1, verse 27 through 28 says, "So God created human beings in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Then God blessed them and said, 'Be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and govern it. Reign over the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, and all the animals that scurry along the ground.'" Our role was important. We were called to govern. We were called to subdue. God has given you authority, and we are supposed to use it to establish his kingdom. We were supposed to subdue the very darkness that we suffer with, the very evil that we deal with on a daily basis, the very death that we have to experience, that all of us one day are going to have to experience in this life, is the very death, the very darkness that we were called to put into submission. We had the authority to do that. Yet, we gave the authority away, and this caused the downward spiral of chaos, sin, and death to spill out into the world. Now, because of our failure at this job, all of creation is groaning and waiting for the children of God to step into the roles. But God set out to bring the whole world back in order. Just a couple chapters later in Genesis 3, verse 15, God said, "I will cause hostility between you and the woman, and between your offspring and her offspring. He will strike your head, and you will strike his heel." Now, this right here is a prophecy of Jesus, who is the seed of his virgin mom. Does anybody know her name? Very good. Well, y'all teach the Bible up in here. I'm impressed. Okay. Mary, very correct. And is the seed of Mary who crushed the head of Satan. Give it up literally for like the all-time victory, because this was the all-time victory. Jesus was the all-time victory. Kawhi Leonard's buzzer beater has nothing on what happened at the cross, okay? So this was a victory. I don't want to make it small right now. This is an amazing thing. Satan's head, death's head, sin's head was crushed by the seed of Mary's child through the virgin birth of Jesus, okay? Right after the fall of man, God looked at the devil, cursed him, proclaiming that he would reverse this destruction and would rescue his creation. I'm going somewhere. Keep with me. Number three, I want to tell you. God set out this mission to rescue the world and made a covenant with a man named Abraham, who God promised he would use to make into a great nation of people. Genesis 12, chapter 1 through 3 says, "The Lord had said to Abraham, 'Leave your native country, your relatives, and your father's family, and go to the land that I will show you.'" Now, I don't know if you notice how weird this is right now, but he said, basically, take all you got, take your wife, take your everything you have right now, all your possessions, take your animals, go up and just start walking this way. I'm not gonna tell you where you're gonna go yet. I'll show you later. Does that sound a little bit weird? God does some crazy things in the Bible right now. So what if I told you to just get up and go? Would you go? Well, I hope after the end of this message, your answer will be, yes, I will go, okay? Are you guys with me? Verse 2, "I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you and make you famous, and you will be a blessing to others. I will bless those who bless you and curse those who treat you with contempt. All the families on the earth will be blessed through you." God's promise was to one day use this nation to rescue this world from the sin of death. So this is the great rescue plan that God set out, okay? So there's three things I need you to know right here. One, humans have a function, okay? We're like an angled mirror. I want you to imagine us right now, okay? You, every single person in here as a human, we have a function. We're like an angled mirror. We're supposed to reflect the image of God, okay? Into the world, we're his image bearers. We're supposed to steward the authority that he's given us and establish and subdue this world. We were the ones that were supposed to steward this earth. We were supposed to be the ones that took care of this earth and kept the order. And we're supposed to take the worship of all of creation, the praises of all of creation, and reflect them back up to God. That's our role. That's always been our role. That's why you hear the old school people say, God gets the glory. He gets the glory, right? Because it all goes back up to him. We're just the conduits. We don't receive the glory. We give it back to him. So that's our function. Those are our three things, okay? So here's the deal. We had a job to do. Are you guys with me? We had a job to do. We had a role to fulfill. And because of our failure at this job, all of creation is groaning and waiting for the children of God to step into our roles. So something had to be changed. But this could not be fixed by just anybody. And any of us who ever experienced real life situations in here know that you just don't bring your problems to everybody you come across with. I hope you know this by now, especially in high school, because not everybody knows how to fix your problems. Not everybody knows how to keep your problems to themselves. I hope you're not running around the school telling everybody your business. Can I get an amen? Amen. Why? Because not everybody's prepared to fix your problem. Not everybody's prepared to help you fix your problem. And not everybody's on your side. Not everybody's got your back. Not everybody's actually even able to have your back because they got their own issues. But that's another story. But here's what I need to tell you is I hope you know by now, you cannot rely on people to fix this problem. It's deeper than that. We recently had a car accident, and my wife's probably going to kill me because I'm talking about this, but it's okay. I'm on the stage. She can't do anything right now. I'm safe. So we recently got an accident. We have a newer car, so we have lane detectors. And we got the things, I don't know if any of you guys have had it, where if you take your hands off the steering wheel, the car will keep itself in the lane and it'll steer itself around. And so I used to do, when we first got the car, I was actually like, look, babe, no hands. And she's like, you need to put your hands on the wheel. But the car would drive itself along within the wheels. It had lane detectors. Now, when we got into a little bit of an accident, the lane detectors got broken. They no longer work now. And I have to take it to the dealership. I can't just take it to any old shop to get that fixed. Why? Because the pieces were designed by Kia. I just told you what kind of car I got. It's a Kia Forte 2017 sport model. It's got a moonroof and all that. Okay, I'm not bragging. That's my wife's car. Mine's older, actually. Anyways. We have to take the technology to the dealership because they're the ones that designed it. They're the ones that are able to fix it. And that's exactly what happened at the cross. Colossians chapter 1, verse 15 through 17 says, Jesus is the divine portrait, the true likeness of the invisible God and the firstborn heir of all of creation. For through the Son, everything was created. That's through Jesus. All of you were created through Jesus. All of this world was created through Jesus. And for through the Son, everything was created both in the heavenly realm and on the earth. All that is seen and unseen, every seat of power, realm of government, principality and authority. It was all created through him and for his purpose. He existed before anything was made and now everything finds completion in him, the one who created all things, the one who knows how everything in creation is supposed to fix it together, the one who formed us and gave us a task of ruling this earth, went to the cross, shed his blood, and perfectly and specifically fixed everything about us. So why? We can now function in our roles as humans. The resurrection of Jesus restored you back into being who you were always meant to be. Ephesians chapter 1 verse 18 says, I pray that your hearts will be flooded with light so that you can understand the confident hope he has given to those he called, his holy people who are his rich and glorious inheritance. I also pray that you will understand the incredible greatness of God's power for us who believe him. This is the same mighty power that raised Christ from the dead and seated him in the place of honor at God's right hand in the heavenly realms. Here's the truth, guys, I want you to know about your salvation. God did not save you to forgive you of your sins and have you sitting around on the couch waiting for heaven, okay? That's not why you got saved. That's not why you're forgiven. God saved you so that you can live as a genuine human being. You have a role. You have a function. You were not meant to sit back and wait for Jesus. You were meant to get in the game. God saved you so that you could live. You have a role as an image bearer. You have a role as a steward of his presence, of his love, and you have a role as a worshiper. You now have the ability to do what you were always supposed to do, and that's fill this earth with love, hope, reflect justice and the holiness of God everywhere we go. And I'm about to get to my point. I'm about to prove this to you, so you guys have to follow through on your end. Romans 8, verse 18 through 21. I am convinced that any suffering we endure, any little tiny drama that you go through, who's ever been through drama? Every time someone talks behind your back, every time you talk behind someone's back, hello? Every time you have trouble at school, every time you have trouble in a relationship, every time you have trouble with each other, I'm convinced that any suffering we endure is less than nothing compared to the magnitude of glory that is about to be unveiled within us. The entire universe is standing on tiptoe, yearning to see the unveiling of God's glorious sons and daughters. For against its will, the universe itself has had to endure the futility resulting from the consequences of human sin. But now, with eager expectation, all creation longs for freedom from its slavery to decay and to experience with us the freedom from coming to God's children. Here's what I want to tell you tonight. Creation is waiting for you. Hopelessness is waiting for you. Depression, anxiety, people who suffer with suicidal thoughts, people who suffer with emotional trauma, all that has been broken and stained with corruption of sin and death is waiting for a generation of sons and daughters who will rise up in their calling, rise up and look into this world and walk with the authority that God's given you. It's not enough. It's not enough to sit back and watch the world pass. We were not called in this thing to sit back in the background. The rescue of the world, God's great rescue plan from Genesis to Revelation includes you. He wants to use you. Creation is waiting for you. We were created to steward this world. We were created to take God's authority that he's given us and rule this world. And he would move through us and use us, and we would usher in his love and his holiness and his justice and his purity into this world. That's our job. And the resurrection of Jesus restored us back to that position. God did not save us to sit in the background and wait around for him to take us to heaven and float around up in space and eat candy. I don't know if that's in your dreams. That used to be in mine. But he called us to function. He called us to be here on the ground in real time with real people who are really hurting and spread love and spread hope. We have to get in the game. There's a time in the Bible where Jesus is on a journey. I love reading about Jesus because he's always on time and he always does the craziest things. He just is. And you read it and I'm like, if Jesus was here right now, he would be the most socially awkward person I've ever met in my life. He did not follow the norm. He did not do what was normally done. In Luke chapter 7, verse 11 through 17, Jesus was on a journey and he had a massive crowd of people following him along with his disciples, this huge crowd. Verse 12, and as he approached the village, he met a multitude of people in a funeral procession, a crowd of hope. Here comes this crowd of hope. And here comes another crowd who doesn't know hope. Another crowd of people who is mourning, who's suffering, who hasn't experienced the hope that those who follow Jesus have. And he met a multitude of people that were in this funeral procession who were mourning as they carried the body of a young man to the cemetery. They were carrying death and hopelessness with them. And the boy was his mother's only son, and his mother was a widow. This lady had lost her husband and now had lost her only son. She lost it all. I imagine that there's not much more that could happen to you in life that could cause more hopelessness and pain than that moment for this woman. And when the Lord saw the grieving mother, his heart broke for her. With great tenderness, he said to her, "Please don't cry." When Jesus witnessed this woman who was hopeless, his heart broke. What's our experience? What's our reaction to the hopelessness of people that we come across? Do our hearts break? Do we feel compassion? Do we look into this world with the love that Jesus had in that moment? Or do we just keep walking unfazed? And then Jesus did the most awkward thing. The thing that would have got him made fun of. The thing that people would have looked down upon. The thing that would have made him stick out from the crowd. He stepped up to the coffin, verse 14, and touched it. And when the pallbearers came to a halt, Jesus said to the corpse, "Young man, I say to you, arise and live." Now, it's important for you to know a couple things. One, this is super awkward, okay? Funerals, they don't stop. Have you ever been on a freeway and watched funerals going by? The cops are racing, the cars are racing, and if you get in the ming, you're probably gonna get hit. They don't stop. They know death is certain. They know that person's not rising from the grave. They know that this is final. They're on a one-way shot to the cemetery. And so was this woman. When Jesus walked up to the coffin, it was countercultural. This was not normal. One, funerals don't stop. Two, in the Jewish world, touching anybody dead makes you ceremonially unclean. In our world, that would have been the same way as being the person that nobody wants to be around, being the person that nobody wants to talk to, being the person who's an outcast from the in crowd. But Jesus wasn't concerned about how this may appear. He wasn't concerned about what people may think about him or how this may affect his social status. But he walked up and he touched the dead body and he said, "Arise and live." And immediately this young man moved, sat up and spoke to those nearby. Jesus presented the son to his mother alive. A tremendous sense of mystery swept over the crowd as they witnessed this great miracle of resurrection. People were shouting praises to God. It went from mourning to laughter, from mourning to happiness, from hopelessness to hope, from death to life. A whole situation, a whole culture was changed in an instant. Because Jesus wasn't afraid of his social status. He wasn't afraid of what people thought about him. He wasn't afraid to go into the darkness and do the opposite of what culture told him to do. They shouted praises to God, saying, "God himself has visited us to bless his people. A great prophet has appeared among us." The news of Jesus and this miracle raced throughout Judea and the entire surrounding region. Now, there are two crowds in this story, and there's two crowds in this world, really. And we see it perfectly described in the story. What crowd are you in? Are you in the crowd that knows hope, lives hope, speaks hope, expects hope? Or are you in the crowd that doesn't know hope? It's okay. Maybe you've already accepted that your circumstances will never change. May never be affected, may never be fulfilled in your life. There's only two places to be. Which one are you in? There's two responses I get when I read this story. One is, here's the thing you need to know. In order to even get into that first crowd, in order to even walk in the crowd with Jesus, in order to even be a part of that movement, you have to go from the second crowd. You have to leave the crowd that doesn't know hope. You have to leave the crowd that's walking towards death. You have to lead the crowd that's walking towards a place where there's no future. There's no expectation. There's no purpose. And the second thing you need to know is, in order to stay in the first crowd, you have to walk with him. You have to follow him. You have to do what Jesus does. What was his response when he saw death? What was Jesus's response when he saw despair? What's yours? Do you respond to those in pain and brokenness with compassion? Do you do what might be socially awkward, like praying for somebody in public, like witnessing to somebody about your faith, like pulling out a Bible when you're not in Chick-fil-A and not caring what people think, but giving somebody the answer that can save their life, the answer that can bring hope into a hopeless situation? Or do you keep walking with the crowd? Because it was a big crowd, guys. Not everybody in that crowd decided to follow Jesus that day. Not everybody in that crowd that witnessed this great miracle, that witnessed this great resurrection power, went on to follow Jesus for the rest of his journey. They got excited for a little bit. They may have listened to his teaching for a little bit, but they went on with their business. Is that what we do when we go to church? Do we feel the presence of God? Do we hear a good word? Do we get excited about God? But when we get back into our schools, into our families, into our friend circles, and we just kind of conform back into the old crowd? You see, what Jesus did that day put him in a position to not be the cool one, to not be the accepted one. But I believe that who I'm talking to right now is a generation that is not concerned about what other people think about you, that's not concerned about the thoughts of what others think about you or how you've been labeled in your schools or in other places in life. And when you really look upon it, you realize that the crowd walking with no hope is a lot greater and a lot bigger than the one we're in right now. So who's going to stand up? Who's going to decide, I don't care what somebody thinks about me. I don't care what they say about me. I don't care how awkward I may feel. I don't care if I'm in Walmart and this looks really dumb right now, but I'm gonna pray for this old lady because I wanna see her get healed. I'm gonna pray for this woman because I wanna see her have hope in her eyes. I want her to know that there's a God who loves her and that no matter how dark of a situation she's in or no matter how desperate she may feel in this moment, but somewhere in this universe, someone is looking down upon her. I want her to know that she's loved. Are you willing to step outside of the box? Look around the world, look around our cities. There's plenty of hurt. There's plenty of pain. There's plenty of hopelessness all around us. And my challenge is the same challenge that God challenged me with. Are we going to continue to go the same direction our friends are going? The same direction this world's going? The same things that we see on a daily basis? Or are we willing to be like Jesus and stop the funeral procession, the movement of hopelessness that we see in our life, and stand up and say, arise to a generation that is dead. Arise to our friends that don't know hope. Arise to the people that we know in our life that we know they're not walking with the Lord. We know that no one's witnessing to them. We know that no one's praying with them. Are we willing to stand up and be that generation to go against the norm, to go against culture, to go against all that is normal in this world and stand for hope? Because creation is waiting, this world is waiting, and somewhere outside of this building, outside of this big, beautiful church that we get to be a part of, is darkness and death and hopelessness, and this world is waiting for us. They're waiting for you. You're the generation that's going to rise up and make change in this world, but it's up to you to decide if you're willing to go against the norm and follow after Jesus. So I have two responses. And if I could get a team up here, or are you guys not wanting to do it? You can? Okay. You can sing whatever you want. I don't care. It's not the singing that counts, it's right here. What's going on right here? Don't lose me. There's two responses that you have tonight. First one, you can't be in the Jesus crowd walking with the hopeless crowd. Okay? You got to leave that crowd. You got to walk away from the hopelessness. You got to walk away from despair. You got to say yes to life. You got to say yes to Jesus. You got to say yes to following after the one who gave his all so that you can live and be free. That's the first response. And the second response is maybe you have hope, right? Maybe you've given your life to God. Maybe you know who Jesus is. Maybe you've been in church your whole life and you've heard this message before. You've heard this preached before. This isn't anything new to you, but maybe you're not walking in it. Maybe you're not living out what's been taught to you, what's been preached to you, what you've been receiving in church. So the second response is this. Are we gonna be that radical, socially awkward, countercultural generation that doesn't care what anybody thinks, but they're gonna be passionate about Jesus and they're gonna go full force into a generation who doesn't know hope and bring the power and the love of God? Because they're waiting for you.
Thank you for tuning in to the Michael Carroll Discipleship Podcast. Make sure to share this episode with your friends and also follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at MCarrollNow. Have a great day. Until next time.